Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. I chose one verse from Bhagavad Gita, from the 16th chapter. The chapter is titled, The Divine and Demoniac Natures. And in this chapter, Krishna, in the first three verses of this chapter, he lists what are those qualities that are considered to be divine qualities, or qualities that are considered to be saintly. Throughout the rest of the chapter, the remaining verses, which are 24 verses, he speaks about those qualities that are of the nature of demons. In practicing Krishna consciousness, one has to avoid these qualities. Otherwise, it becomes very difficult to make advancement in spiritual life. So here's one verse. It's from the 16th chapter, verse number 21. Shri vidham narakasye dam dwaram nasana atmanaha kama krodas tatalobas tasmad etat trayam trijet. Krishna says, there are three gates leading to hell, lust, anger, and greed. Every sane person should give these up, for they lead to the degradation of the soul. There's a very small purport, my Srila Prabhupada. The beginning of demoniac life is described here. One tries to satisfy his lust, and when he cannot, anger and greed arise. A sane man who does not want to glide down to the two species of demoniac life must try to give up these three enemies, which can kill the self to such an extent that there will be no possibility of liberation from this material entanglement. End of purport. Om Agyan Timirandasya Gina Jina Salakaya Chaksu Unlilitam Nina Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. So in practicing Krishna consciousness, there is things to do and there is things to avoid. In practicing Krishna consciousness means to purify the heart. The heart, the mind, has been associating with the material energy since time immemorial. Due to that association with material energy, so many what is called anarthas. Anartha means one, those qualities that one does not want, unwanted habits, unwanted qualities, contaminations of the material energy. And due to these anarthas, one's natural loving propensity towards the Supreme Lord is covered. Krishna explains in another place in Bhagavad Gita that just like smoke covers fire, just like dust covers a mirror, just like the womb is covered by the embryo, still in the same way, the living entity's lust is covering its natural loving propensity towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These qualities, or disqualities, we might say, Krishna mentions three here. Kama, Krodha, and Lobha, lust, anger, and greed. But in other places, six are mentioned as primary. Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Mohan, Mada, and Matsarya. The other three are illusion, pride, and enviousness. These are the six anarthas, or what we say coverings over the soul, that force the soul to act against its own best nature. And as the living entity cultivates these qualities, they go down and down into lower species of life. Here Krishna says that one glides down to demoniac species. That means species of life that are lower than the human form of life. Srila Prabhupada says, there's no limit to Krishna consciousness. One can go higher and higher in their developing their love for Krishna. But he also, in the same sentence, says there's no limit to how low you can go also. You can go as low as unimaginable. You can go farther and farther away from Krishna to more and more hellish species of life. Well, there's no even the slightest understanding of one's relationship with God. So these are the things that keep one covered: lust, anger, and greed, illusion, pride, and what is called enviousness. And Krishna says these must be given up, otherwise one cannot practice spiritual life effectively. Of course, the practice of Krishna consciousness means to give up these things, to become purified from these things, and to awaken our natural love of God. But on our own, we are, what we say, helpless. We do not have the power to give these up. Sometimes we see that a person in the material world wants to develop good qualities. So they make some formula, they make some arrangements to give up these bad qualities through proper behavior, through proper attitude, through philosophical study of these things and how to avoid them. But ultimately, they'll all end in failure. Any type of empirical attempt to free oneself of bad qualities always ends in failure, because these qualities have taken root within the heart and mind. If you want to cut the weeds, if you take your lawnmower or you take your sword and cut, you can remove what is on the surface, but underneath the surface the root is still there. And as long as the root remains, the weed will grow back in due course of time. So these negative, what we say, qualities or bad habits have taken root in the heart and mind of the living entity due to its association with material energy from time immemorial. And no external type of formula can rid these. Only the process of bhakti. And process of bhakti means that one has to take shelter of Krishna. Krishna kills these qualities within our heart by his mercy as we engage in devotional service. These qualities are compared to demons. These are considered to be demons. And Krishna is known as one who kills demons. Demons are powerful. They're more powerful than the living beings. They're very highly empowered personalities who have taken the material energy and have developed it for their own selfish interests. So demons are very powerful in a negative way. Just like if there's spiritual power, there's also negative power. So only the mercy of the Lord through the process of bhakti can rid that. And Krishna showed, he demonstrated in his own spiritual leelas, in his own pastimes, how he got rid of these six demons. We have the story of Jai and Vijay. Perhaps you know in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the third canto, there's a nice narration of how two gatekeepers, one was named Jai and one was named Vijay, in the Vaikuntha Loka, fell to the material world and took three births as demons. Altogether, six births. Now these personalities had committed a transgression of spiritual etiquette. They didn't honor properly great souls who came to visit the Lord, the four Kumaras. The four Kumaras came to see Lord Vishnu, Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha, and they were stopped because they were only four-year-old boys, and these gatekeepers were thinking, who are these young boys? But actually they were already self-realized souls. And so they coaxed these two gatekeepers to fall to the material world and take birth as demons. In fact, they were given a choice. You can take 3 births in the material world as demons or 7 births as devotees. Because they had come to the spiritual world, they didn't want to go to the material world for any length of time, so they chose 3 births as demons rather than 7 births as devotees. How that thought is understood, it's hard to understand. But they didn't want to be away from the Lord so long, so they accepted 3 births as demons. And of course there's another point that Krishna wanted to fight. So Krishna, in order to fulfill his desire to fight, they facilitated that fight by becoming demons. We just celebrated last week the appearance of Sri Varahadev, the incarnation of the Lord that appeared to kill the first of the 3 manifestations of Jaya and Vijaya. Now, each of these 6 births represents one of these 6 qualities. The first demon that was killed by the Lord was Hiranyaksha. Hiranyaksha was the personification of which of the qualities? Who knows? Greed. He was greedy. He was so greedy for his own selfish interest that he extracted as much gold as he could from the earth. And he took so much gold out of the earth, not caring for what would happen, that the entire earth fell from its orbit and fell into the lower planets. It fell into the bottom of the Garvadak ocean. Greed has no sense of what we say concern for others. If one is greedy, they don't care. If I simply to satisfy my greed. We see in today's world, especially in modern society, the philosophy of greed is being perpetuated by this. You need this. You must be like this. The philosophy of more, right? The philosophy of more is the philosophy of greed. And especially, I've noticed in my this particular visit to India, it's become more greedy. There's more signs, more hoardings, more advertisements for material things. Now, before you weren't happy, now here's how you become happy. Nobody was happy before. That's the philosophy. Now you need these. Only then can you be happy. Before there was no such thing as happiness. Now we've created this, the source of your happiness, right? Yeah. And they use various types of slogans, various types of allurements, in order to perpetuate the philosophy of greed. More is better. More is success. It starts with things, and then as it perpetuates, it turns into relationships. First you have greed for things, and then you have greed for people, to have as much relationships outside of the normal relationships. So that's what happens. That's the second stage of greed. One becomes greed. Within greed there is lust. Greed and lust is contained within greed. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that within anger, lust is there. Within greed, anger and lust is there. Within illusion, greed, anger and lust is there. Within pride, illusion, greed, anger and lust is there. And within envy, they're all there. Yeah. Envy is the foundation of all, the root cause of all the anarthas. Enviousness of Krishna. And so, and we see this greed. So Hiranyaksha, he had so much greed, he was never a person who is greedy is never satisfied. Never satisfied. The more you have, the less satisfied you become, because by having more doesn't make you satisfied. If you're satisfied, you're satisfied. Right? We have the story of Vamanadeva. When Vamanadeva came to visit Bali Maharaj, and Bali Maharaj had conquered Indra and had conquered the whole universe, all the way from the middle planetaries, all the systems of the universe. He had pushed Indra and all the demigods out, and he owned everything. And he was performing sacrifice in celebration of his victory, and the Lord appeared on behalf of the demigods to try to trick Bali. And when Bali saw the Lord in the form of Vamanadeva, he became so attracted, because he was a Brahmana. And when he saw, the Lord came as a Brahmin boy, Bali was a Kshatriya. And he had some sense of sacrifice, he had some sense of charity. He was giving to the Brahmanas. So he saw this beautiful Brahmin boy, who was actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he offered him, he said, "Please, you've come, you're my guest, you're my honored guest, take whatever you want. I can give you anything. I can give you an island, I can give you a planet, I can give you whatever you want. Don't feel any reluctance, just ask." And the Lord said, "Just give me 3 steps." So, but he said, "Your steps are so small. What can you take with 3 steps?" But the Lord said, he gave a very powerful explanation, that one who cannot be satisfied with what they need will never be satisfied. That was the statement by the Lord. If you got what you need, then that's all that's necessary. But now the idea is to have more. And no one knows what they need anymore. When you keep getting bombarded with the idea of you need more, you don't even know what you need. You lose track of what is actually your needs. Then you have to ask, "Do I need this?" But really, you don't. If you have to ask whether you need this, that means you don't need it. What do you need? Some food, place to sleep, some relationships, family members. That is all we need, right? But now we need so many things. So the word need and the word greed rhyme. It's the same thing. So greed has taken over need. It's a longer word. Yeah. So Hiranyaksha was so greedy, and he plunged, by his greed, he forced the earth planet to fall to the bottom of the Garbhodak ocean. And all the living entities who were on the earth planet were in total distress. So what happened? The Lord incarnated in his beautiful form as a boar. Boars are not beautiful. But when the Lord incarnates as a boar, he becomes beautiful. He actually becomes very attractive. Why did he choose a boar? Because a boar goes to filthy places. And so he went to the bottom of, it says that the bottom of the ocean is not a clean place. So he went into the bottom of the ocean, and with his tusks, he lifted the earth planet back up into its orbit, and then he fought and killed the demon of greed. So it took the personality of the Lord to actually destroy greed. So the message is that one cannot destroy these qualities by one's own efforts. One needs the mercy of the Lord. What was the second manifestation? And that was Hiranyakashipu. What was his disqualification? Who knows? He had many, but one was outstanding. What was his outstanding disqualification? Huh? He was everything, but one that was very outstanding. Pride. He was so proud. He was thinking, there is nobody as great as me. Huh? Pride, in pride, there is illusion. He was so much in the illusion of his greatness. Why? He had been given a benediction by Lord Brahma that he could not be killed in so many ways. Not by land, not on land, sea, or air, not by this weapon, not by any weapons, not inside or outside, not day or night, not by any man, by any beast. And he was thinking, I'm immortal. He was thinking, there is nobody as great as me. He was so much intoxicated by this pride that when Prahlad Maharaj, his pure son, said, we're going fast through these pastimes, because if I would tell the whole pastime, you'll be here till next Sunday. Which is all right, but I shouldn't do that. Is that he had his son. He was benedicted with a pure devotee son. And his son was preaching Krishna consciousness to him in so many ways. And he was becoming angry and malicious and violent. He tried to kill Prahlad in so many ways. But Prahlad was protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He couldn't kill him. Rake Krishna Morike, More Krishna Rake Ke. If one is protected by the Lord, no one can harm. And if one is not protected, no one can save. So Prahlad had complete absorption, therefore he had complete protection of the Lord. So what happened is that Hiranyakashipu was so frustrated in trying to kill his own little son, such a cruel demon, that at one point he said, Prahlad, my dear son, where do you get your power from? And Prahlad said, I get my power, Father, from the same place you get your power. From the same place everybody gets their power, from Krishna, from Vishnu. And, boy, that really angered him. He became so angry. He said, my power is my power. Comes from me. He was so much so proud of whatever he had achieved, and so much an illusion of his position. And of course, the Lord incarnated in his most magnificent form as the Sringadev and destroyed not only his pride, but he destroyed his whole body. And so, in this case, we see the demon of pride was destroyed by under the hands of the Lord. So what is pride? Pride is the sense of false ego that develops due to being enamored by this body. Proud of one's education, proud of one's good birth, proud of one's abilities to do things, proud of one's beauty, proud. It says that pride is so strong that even if one is poor, they're proud of the little bit they have. They say even a pauper is proud of his penny or his rupee. So pride goes so deep. Pride is translated as madha. Madha means, another meaning of madha means madness. Pride means mad. One who is proud is mad. Because the living entity is simply an eternal servant of the Lord, Jivasurubhai Krishna Nitya Krishna Das. And there is spiritual pride. We are proud that we are Krishna's part and parcel. But that is real pride. But material pride, which is connected with this material body, and whatever accomplishments we have in connection with this material body, just creates so many offenses. When one is proud, they're offensive. They're offensive to others. They think they're better than others. So this pride cannot be given up simply by one's own efforts. One needs the mercy of the Lord. One has to have Krishna's mercy, and then one can destroy the demon of pride. So Krishna killed that demon of pride. What is the next manifestation of Jai and Vijay? They took birth again as Ravana and Kumbhakarna. So Ravana, what was his? So we have greed and pride. What was Ravana's? What was his? Lust. Oh, he was so lusty. He was lust. It says lust in the Bhagavad Gita says is like a blazing fire. And if you put fuel on the fire, what happens? The fire continues to burn. And it burns more. When one tries to satisfy lust, it becomes stronger. Lust causes unhappiness. When one is lusty, they're not feeling at all happy. So they satisfy their lust in different ways, and then that temporary relief from the suffering caused by lust is gone. But then again, it's only temporary. Just like if you take a log and you throw it on the fire, for some time the fire may go down due to the presence of the log. You give it time, then that fire will again build. So when the way to get rid of lust is to try this, is not to satisfy it. Of course, it's not easy because it's strong. Prabhupada used the example, if you have a tiger and you don't feed him, what happens? He becomes more ferocious, right? And then you don't feed him for longer. He becomes more ferocious. You can't get even near him, even though he's maybe in a cage. Still, he's so ferocious. But then wait some more time, and then he becomes like little pussycat. He can't do anything because he becomes weak. And so lust is like that. When you don't satisfy it, it becomes stronger. And then stronger. And then so strong. But if you somehow or other can tolerate it, then gradually it starts to go away. Of course, going away means that we engage our energy in the service of the Lord. But even in a material way, if we stop feeding our lust, it goes down in a due course of time. But everyone thinks, no, let me feed it. Let me satisfy it. And it's like a blazing fire. So Ravana, he had so much. He was handsome. He was charismatic. He was learned in Vedic scriptures. He had knowledge of the Vedas. He had so much wealth. He was rich. He had conquered Kuvera. He had taken Kuvera's chariot. Kuvera is the treasurer of the demigods. He had the best chariot amongst even all the devas put together. And he had so many qualified wives. So chaste, faithful, Mandodari. She is glorified as a chaste lady within the Vedic scriptures. She was the wife of Ravana because of her faithfulness and chastity to Ravana. So he had everything that everyone wanted, everyone that aspires for in life. But still, he wasn't satisfied. He went after the wife of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And his family members, his brothers, his friends, everyone was telling him, you know, let Sita go. He had captured Sita when Ram had left into the forest to kill Maricha in the form of a demon. He had captured Mother Sita. And Ram was looking everywhere for Sita. And Sita is the goddess of fortune. So he had everything, but still he was not satisfied. He was so lusty. And when Ram finally came, and there was the fight, and his soldiers were being destroyed one after another, his brothers were being killed one after another, all his leading generals were being destroyed. And the advice came, hey, if you, Ravana, wake up. Just give Sita back. If you just give Sita back, you know, you can go on and live. You have everything. But still, he couldn't hear. He couldn't hear. Why? Because he was so much absorbed in his lusty desires. So lust is like that. You can't give good instructions to a person who is absorbed in trying to satisfy their lusty desires. They can't hear. The voice of lust is too loud. It's like a clarion call. So therefore, what happened? This lust, it destroyed him. And Ram came and killed the demon of lust. So we see, again, how powerful this enemy of lust is. It destroys all good qualities. Sometimes you see a person has many good qualities, but somehow or other they fall victim to lust. What happens? Their whole life becomes ruined. If they have some scandal, just like sometimes leaders, presidents or heads of state get involved with some lusty affairs, and their whole life becomes a scandal. One little, what we say, discretion into the affairs of lust and whatever else they accomplish, no one remembers that anymore. They just remember the bad things. It's like that, yeah. So lust destroys everything. It's like a fire. If you set fire to a place, everything is destroyed. So Krishna says in this verse we were just reading here in Bhagavad Gita that one must give up this lust. It leads to this, its soul goes lower and lower, down, and the more demoniac species of lust. And one can never satisfy lust. So one cannot destroy lust on one's own ability. Krishna came as Ram, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He destroyed the demon of lust by his arrows. That arrow, we might use the analogy, the arrow is like the holy name. The arrow is like the holy name. And lust situates in the heart. Yeah, when Ram was shooting his arrows and cutting off the heads of Ravana, it was just growing back. So, but when he hit the heart, the seat of the lust, and then Ravana was finished. So lust sits within the heart, it sits within the mind, it sits within the intelligence, it sits within the senses. It is the all-devouring, sinful enemy of the world. Krishna was asked by Arjuna, what forces a person to act against his own best understanding? What makes a man act against his own good consciousness? And he said, and Krishna says, what is the first word? Kama Asha, Krodha Asha, Rajaguna Samudbhava, Mahashano Mahapapam, Spidheha Viharvarinam. He says, it is lust, Arjuna. When comes in the mode, contact of the mode of passion, turns into anger and is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. We look at the world today, we see there's so much fighting. What are they fighting over? They're fighting over someone else's land. I want this land. I want this land. The lusty desires to have and control more, I want. So wars break out because of lust. And when lust is unsatisfied, it becomes anger, and then anger turns into destructive. But what happened? Prabhupada says, they fight over the land, they die, and the land is still there. Right? It's foolish, you see. People fight. Nationalism, right? This idea of nationalism. Fighting over the land, and then you die, and you get buried in the land you're fighting over. That's what it is, yeah. Prabhupada talks about that. And the riots in 1947 here in India. The Hindu-Muslim riots in 1947. He said there's so much killing. But then again, they just piled up all the bodies and that was it. Everyone, no one knew who was Hindu or who was Muslim. So this is the nature of lust. It's never satisfied. So one that must give up this lust. What is the next demon? Was the brother of Ravana, who was Kumbhakarna. Kumbhakarna. I mean, talk about low personalities. I mean, this person he has no character at all. I mean, Ravana had some character. And even Hiranyakashipu was somewhat respectable in some ways. But Kumbhakarna, what was his anartha? He was in illusion. What happened to Kumbhakarna? It's interesting because Ravana, Kumbhakarna, and some of other Ravana's brothers and others were performing great vratas in order to become powerful. So Lord Brahma granted the benediction to Ravana that he could not be killed by anyone except a human being. And when it was time to give Kumbhakarna a benediction, the demigods were so much in anxiety because this demon, he was so huge and he would just eat as much as possible. He would eat, I mean, if you take all the brahmacharis in the world together and add it all up, Kumbhakarna could eat more than them. And brahmacharis can eat. I know, I used to be a brahmachari. Still am. Brahmacharis have that mystic power. They can consume great quantities of prasadam. Not here in Chaupati, though. Not here in Chaupati, but some other places. I won't go into details, anyway. There was one devotee in New Vrindavan. He ate 70 chapatis. 70. It's recorded. He ate 2 gallons of sweet rice. This is in one sitting. 20 bowls of cereal. And cereal was not like the cereal you have. We make it out of water and oats and we stir it together. And you put it in the bowl, and then if you took your bowl and turned it upside down, it would stick to the bowl because it was like glue. That was the cereal in the old days of Krishna consciousness. Yeah, I'm serious. You could turn your bowl upside down, it wouldn't fall out. So he used to eat so much, he got the name Prasadam addict. And his whole program was to get as much prasadam as he could. In those days, it wasn't so easy to get prasadam. In the beginning days of Krishna consciousness, we would serve out, and then that's it. You'd have to wait till the next meal. There was nothing in between. everything was either locked up or unavailable. You know, and so he would eat so much. But he wasn't big either. He wasn't so big. But still, he could consume large kumbhakarna. When he went before Lord Brahma to get a benediction, Brahma said to him, the demigod said, "Brahma, don't give this guy a benediction, because if you give him a benediction, there's nothing left to our planets. He's already eating everything in the universe. There's nothing to be left." So Brahma was thinking, "What can I do?" So he called his wife, Saraswati. He said, "Saraswati, can you do something about this kumbhakarna? When he asks for the benediction, you appear on his tongue and you change the words around." So he came before Brahma to get his benediction. Brahma said, "What do you want?" And he was about to speak, and then Saraswati spoke, and he said, "I want to sleep." And then he said, "What did I say?" Brahma said, "So be it. Granted, we give you that benediction. You can sleep forever." So when Ravana heard what happened to his brother, he said, "You can't do that." Brahma said, "That's what he asked for. I'm giving him his benediction. He can sleep all the time." Well, some people might like that, of course. But Ravana said, you gotta change that benediction. You gotta change the curse, actually. He said, "Okay, he can sleep for 364 days a year, and one day a year he can wake up and he can eat as much as he can in that one day." So that was his benediction. He could be awake for one day. So he, during the battle of Kurukshetra, during the battle of fight between Ram and Ravana, he was asleep. And when the Ravana's soldiers were being annihilated, they said, "Let's wake up Kumbhakarna, because he's got his one day coming." So they tried to wake him up. So the soldiers, Ravana's soldiers, they came with their chariots, they came with their weapons, they came with their musical instruments, and they did everything they could to wake him up. First they blew their horns in his ears, didn't wake up. And then they were taking their clubs and beating him, still he was fast asleep. And then they took their chariots and started to ride over his body with their chariots. And then he became a little bit groggy, slightly waking up. Sleep is so nice, right? Everybody likes to sleep. People in the material world, when it's a way to escape the suffering of material world, right? To sleep. Prabhupada said something in 1974 that shocked the whole ISKCON society. He was talking. He said, "There are four things. There are eating, sleeping, mating, and defending." He says these are the four bodily activities of the conditioned soul, of the four necessities of the body. But he says out of the four, the one that's the worst is oversleeping. Said that. Of course, we were all thinking, well, maybe it's illicit sex. No, Prabhupada said oversleeping is the worst, because human form of life is rare. It's very rare. And to waste time in sleep, Prahlad Maharaj talks about that in his prayers, that the living entity spends half his life asleep. Did you know sleeping is bad for your health? Too much sleeping is bad for the health? Yeah, they did a survey recently in America, one of the big universities of Southern California. They did this 6-year study on sleep, because the average propaganda is that everyone needs at least 8 hours of sleep. That's the propaganda. And some people get 10, 12. I used to know some friends that they would wake up about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And then they would go out all night and party to about 3 in the morning and then go back to sleep till 4 o'clock in the afternoon again. This is their cycle of activities. Yeah, you didn't know that, did you? They have this thing, Guinness's Book of Records, what you can do the most of. And some people can sleep amazing amount of hours. But this survey, done by the University of California, showed that those people who sleep 6 hours are more healthier than people who sleep 8 hours. And people who sleep 5 hours are better in better health than people who sleep 8 hours. And people who sleep 10 hours, they have a mortality rate of people who are naturally very fat. This was the survey. The conclusion was oversleeping is unhealthy. People sometimes think, let me sleep as much as possible. That way I'll feel ready. Simple sleeping makes you feel like it just takes all your enthusiasm. So we should sleep. Bhagavad Gita says not too much, not too little. And Prabhupada recommends 6 hours. Of course, if you work very hard, then you can sleep 7. But not so much. If you sleep too much, then you waste time away from the goal of life, and you actually increase your lusty desires. Too much sleep increases lust. It makes the mind more agitated for sense gratification. So Kumbhakarna, he was always sleeping. So finally, after driving chariots and blowing bugles and beating him with weapons, he finally woke up. And then what did he do? He ate. They were bringing him big, huge buckets of blood and big, huge buckets of fat. And he was eating bucket after bucket after bucket. He was just eating and eating and eating and eating and eating. So, illusion that happiness comes from eating and sleeping. This is illusion. Illusion means I am this body, satisfy the body is my happiness. So, Kumbhakarna was there. And so, who was it? Lakshman killed him, right? It was Lakshman. Lakshman killed the demon of illusion in the form of Kumbhakarna. Was it Lakshman or Ram? Ram? Actually Ram. When he came out of the city, when he came out of his cave, he was so big that he was bigger than the city of Lanka. He was so huge. When all the monkey soldiers saw him, they just ran. Many of them, not all of them, except for the chief monkey soldiers, they stood and fought. But he was so huge that he was just grabbing like 100 monkeys at a time and stuffing them in his mouth. He was having monkey prasad. It was like an incredible amount of food he was eating, as much as he could. And illusion is like that, that simply, just give me more. Illusion means I'm this body and more is better. In illusion, greed is there. But illusion is this idea that I am this body and nothing else. And the goal of life is to eat, drink, be merry, and then because life is short, this is all you can do to be happy. Yeah, this is what is being propagated today in modern society, that simply satisfy the demands of the body to the most you can satisfy. So we can't get rid of these anarthas. Only Krishna can do it. So Krishna came and killed the demon of illusion. And the next demon that's the second manifestation of Jaya and Vijaya. And there was two more. There was Dantravarka and Shishupal. And what was the disqualification of Shishupal? Envy. Oh, he was so envious. When he was born, the first word he said was, "You rascal Krishna." Yeah. You know, when the baby comes out and the mother and father are there, they're waiting for the first words, you know, mama, kaka, dada. But he said, rascal Krishna. That was his first words. Yeah, he was so envious of Krishna. He hated Krishna. And he was born with four arms. He had a very high birth. His mother was Krishna's aunt. She was related. So Shishupal was Krishna's cousin. They were cousins. So after some time, the mother, Sister Shishupal's mother, she took him to an astrologer. And the astrologer said, "Well, he has four arms, but when he meets the person who will be the cause of his death, he will lose two of his arms." That was the astrologer. So she went home, and then after some time it was time for the ceremony of the child's one-year-old birthday. So she wanted to invite all the family members. So she invited Krishna to come and see her baby. Krishna says, "You don't want me to come." She said, no, this is your cousin. You should come. Come and see my baby." He said, "It's not a good idea that I come." She was insistent. He said, "Okay, but I'm not responsible for what happens." So he came. And then when he saw the baby, two of Shishupal's arms fell off. And his mother was shocked. She said, "Krishna, you're going to be the one who kills my child?" He said, "I don't want to kill him. I don't want to kill anyone, but he's so envious of me. He could never stop blaspheming Krishna." He said, "But Krishna said, I'll give him a benediction. He can blaspheme up to 100 times. He can criticize me, say bad things about me 100 times, but he must take a break after 100. If he keeps going past 100, then I'll have to do something." So, yeah, his whole life he was always envious of Krishna. And Krishna was respected amongst all the members of the Yadu dynasty as being the most respectable of all great personalities. So it was time for the Rajasuya sacrifice. And during the Rajasuya sacrifice, the best of all personalities is elected to be honored, the most respectable person. So it was unanimously voted that Krishna should be the most respectable person in this sacrifice. But when Shishupal heard the vote, he became angry. He stood up, he said, "Krishna, Krishna is this, Krishna is that, Krishna is this, that, this." And he was just one after another and everything. The other soldiers who were sitting there, who were, you know, devotees, they were getting so upset. They were ready to kill Shishupal. But Krishna, somehow they were restrained. And then one after another. And Krishna was counting 95, 96, 97, 98, 99, 100, 101. He lost count. And Krishna took out his Sudarshan chakra and gave him a haircut. Haircut below his head. His complete haircut. The last haircut. And then that was the end of his enviousness. So Krishna killed the demon of envy. And then the Sudarshan chakra, it caught all the blood from hitting the floor, because if the blood would hit the floor, it would ruin the sacrifice. So everything was considered still auspicious, and Shishupal was killed. So he was the demon of envy. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his discussions on this point, says that envy is the root cause of all anarthas. We fall to the material world because we want to enjoy separate from Krishna. We're not satisfied with having Krishna being the exclusive enjoyer. The living entity wants to enjoy like Krishna. So we come to the material world to try to be like that. So this envious, Prabhupada says, everyone in the material world is envious. The mother is envious of the children, the father is envious of everyone is envious of everyone else. If someone has good qualities, you want those good qualities. And sometimes you do things sometimes to tear other people down or to make them look bad. Especially in business. Business is the program of envy. When someone is a better businessman, then you have to be better than that. And if that person does something wrong and his business goes down, you're happy. So someone, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, what is envy? Envy is if you're successful, I'm unhappy, and if you're unhappy, I'm happy. That is envy. If you're happy when someone is unhappy, and if you're unhappy when someone is happy, that's envy. So therefore, that is the root cause of all anarthas. So that has to be given up. Prabhupada explains that lust, anger, greed, illusion, and pride somehow can be dovetailed in Krishna's service, but envy cannot. Envy must be given up. Even if you have, they say sometimes that envy is a way to admire. If you see something about someone that you like, then that is a way of admiring people. But that an admiration, when it takes the form of what we say, strife or competition, then it becomes envy. You can admire another person's qualities and aspire to also to have those qualities. But you're happy that that person has those qualities. Prabhupada said in Krishna consciousness, if someone is doing so nice service, maybe preaching so nicely or distributing so many books or has good, so many good qualities, then you should aspire to be like that also. But at the same time, you're happy to see that person successful. So that is spiritual competition, which is not envy, but it actually increases Krishna's pleasure. So we strive by the example of others to improve our devotional service. And that gives Krishna pleasure. So that is okay. But when we feel unhappy, or if we feel slighted because someone else is getting something we're not getting, then that's envy. So Krishna killed the demon of envy. And the last one was Dantravarga. He was the personification of anger. Krishna didn't waste time with Dantravarga. Krishna wanted to go to Vrindavan to see the residents. He was in Dwarka. And he wanted to go see the residents of Vrindavan. He had been away for some time. And Dantravarga was in Mathura. So Krishna came to Mathura. And when Krishna came to Mathura, on his way going to Vrindavan, he was met by Dantravarga. And Dantravarga was so angry at Krishna that he had killed his friend Shishupal. They were friends. Close friends. Demons, they have friends. They're not friends. They just act like, if someone does something to my demoniac friend, it's a cause of me to get back at you. But I don't really care. Just like we have the story of Jai and Vijay. The story of Jagai and Madai. They apparently were friends, but when they couldn't take out their hostilities on someone else, they were beating each other, right? They were beating each other. So what kind of friends do demons have, you know? Not much friendship there. So he became so angry at Krishna that he took his club. He was charging at Krishna. Krishna knocked the club out of his hands. And then without a club, he ran to Krishna to try to strike him, and Krishna just punched him and destroyed him. He didn't waste time. So anger, what is anger? Bhagavatam says, or Bhagavad Gita says, anger is the younger brother of desire. Anger is the younger brother of desire. When desires are unfulfilled, one develops anger. Dayate visayam pumsam te sute sangat sanjayate, sangat sanjayate kama, kama krodha vijayate, krodha bhavati samoham, samoham sriti vibrahma, sriti brahma sa buddhinasa, buddhinasa pranashyati. Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter describes, by contemplating the objects of sense gratification, lust comes. From lust, anger, from anger, bewilderment of memory, a delusion, from delusion, bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost. And when intelligence is lost, and one falls down, pranashyati, one falls down again into the material energy. So, when one has desires for sense gratification, they become unfulfilled, then anger comes. And anger is very, very destructive. Anger can come without provocation. And you'll see today, in today's society, as we become more materially advanced, and people try to find more happiness through material things, there will be more anger. Because material things cannot satisfy the soul. And due to that frustration of not being able to enjoy material things, there will be more and more anger. It's unfortunate, but that is the way of human nature. So therefore, one should be satisfied with what one needs and engage in devotional service. Krishna takes care of his devotees. Krishna, what is that verse in this ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita? Anayas chintayanto mam ye jana paryupasate tesham nitya vayutanam yoga shema vahamyaham. If you engage in my desire, devotional service, meditating on me, then I carry what you lack, I preserve what you have. There's no lack in devotional service. When we engage in devotional service, we become qualified. There's no qualifications on the material level. Srimad Bhagavatam says, material qualifications are not real qualifications because they are based on the arrangements of the material energy. When the material energy shifts, our good qualities also shift. Good qualities and good character come in relationship to our bhakti, our devotion to Krishna. Our good character starts to manifest. Everyone has good character, but material character is covering our good character. So when we engage in devotional service to the Lord, we actually develop real good character, real good qualities. And therefore, that is satisfying. If one wants satisfaction, if one wants happiness, one must take up seriously the process of devotional service. So we mentioned six demons and the six anarthas that accompany these demons. So how to kill them? Chant the holy names of the Lord, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. That purifies the mind, relieves us of these disqualifications. One who seriously and regularly chants the holy names of the Lord, gradually these qualities or these disqualities go from the heart and mind. One has to chant with attention and one has to chant with devotion regularly. And that chanting is very powerful. The chanting is so powerful that it contains all of Krishna's qualities in his holy name. All of Krishna's qualities are found in Krishna's holy name. Therefore, we are powerless. We cannot overcome lust, anger, greed, illusion, pride, and envy. These things are powerful. And we see even the greatest of personalities in this, in both spiritual circles and material circles, have fallen victim to these things. So how powerful they are, we don't really understand their power. But one who takes complete shelter of Krishna in the form of his holy names can free themselves from the effects of these qualities. The holy name is protective. The holy name is purifying. Material energy is a contamination. Prabhupada says, chant the holy names, and that chanting is like an antiseptic. What is an antiseptic? If you have a disease, then you need to get rid of the disease by applying some antiseptic. Once you apply the antiseptic, the disease is gone, but the antiseptic also prevents you from getting the disease again. So you become, what we say, protected. So that antiseptic is the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. This is the medicine in this age. It is because Maya's, what we say, diseases are strong. And this is the powerful medicine. Nothing can overcome this medicine of the holy name. So associate with devotees, chant the holy names of the Lord, engage in devotional service, make your life perfect. And everything you aspire for in life and more will be given to you by Krishna through the mercy of his devotional service. And gradually we can awaken our true love of God. So this is the process. Okay. Stop. And take questions? Yeah. Okay. Is there any questions? Is there anyone who would like to ask any questions? Feel free to ask questions on any subject. Mahaprabhu? Prabhu. Microphone?
Maharaj, material world, people have big problems. Just like you have mentioned just now, that this lust, greed, anger, kaam, krodh, lobh, mad, moh, matsar, they are so dangerous, so powerful. And if we tell these people that we have so many, they have so big problem. And when we go there and talk to them, and they come with their problem, and we say, chant Hare Krishna and be happy, and you will, all problem will be solved. Now one side, you are saying that Lord has to incarnate to kill these six demons. And these six demons are there in our body. That's why we are here in this material world. And in that situation, how people can believe that such big demons which we have got with us, the chanting can solve all our problems?
Wow. Faith. Bhakti is the path of faith. Faith starts on a very small level. One has a little faith in Krishna, one has a little faith in spiritual life. But in order to overcome the force of these negative qualities, we have to have a lot of faith. Faith inspires one to perform devotional service. Bhakti is the path of faith. Now, sometimes I get this question, and the answer is a little different, that some people can't chant, or they can't take up the process of chanting serious enough because the anarthas are so strong. Maybe not so much in India, but in the West do we get this. Yes, you tell us to chant and associate, practice devotional service, but we can't even do that. So what should we do in order to get to that stage of the enthusiasm necessary to follow the process? So now we are trying to understand how material energy takes root in the mind and the heart. So in many cases, people need to develop relationships with senior devotees who can help them practically apply these principles of devotional service in such a way that it works. You know, we use the general statement, but we find that in many cases there is some need for personal interaction and personal guidance and direction. We're just giving a lecture, so we speak generally. But in most cases, people need to take shelter of a spiritual master or a senior Vaishnava and get the practical understanding how best to execute devotional service. That way, they're effective in devotional service. So that's the next stage. How best to execute my service? How to apply the principles in my life, in my particular situation? I may be a student, I may be a working person, I may be a housewife. So I may be coming from different social backgrounds. So therefore, how to best apply my principles. That's why here in Radha Gopinath, you have the counselor system. Practically understand how to do it with guidance, with questions and answers like that. So we fine-tune the process of bhakti and make it more personal and how best to do it. If we just say chant, I want to chant, but my mind also wants to do other things. So I listen to my mind many times. But if I have some person who is helping me, guiding me, and telling me how to do it, and then I can, that external mercy is necessary to overcome the dictations of my mind. We need that. Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Sastri Hoi, Sadhu Slavamatta, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siddhi Hoi. Association of Vaishnavas, and hearing and chanting in their association, getting their guidance, their direction, it's all a very integral part of our spiritual success. So you attract persons, but then again you have to take care of them and give them the direction they need in order to successfully execute the process. Because Maya, one of the qualities of Maya is she makes everything so complicated. Material life is so complicated. Spiritual life is simple. But to come to the simplicity, we have to get away from our complicated natures. That's the good thing about India, is that this culture and lifestyle, in its indigenous inception, is quite simple. But as soon as you bring all this Western garbage in here, with all this cars and computers and billboards and so many things, you become so complicated, and you can't even figure out how to sleep anymore. Sleeping becomes a problem. Yeah, in the West, people can't sleep. They have to read books on how to sleep. I'm serious. They take pills on how to sleep. Because I become so stressed out in my complicated material life that I can't even do the basic things naturally. The animals do it naturally. The human being has to read books. Well, I'm serious. You'll see when you go to America. You think I'm exaggerating. It's amazing. The frustrated level that when you give the simple instructions, they can't figure out how to do it because their lives are so complicated. So, therefore, personal guidance, attention, and care is necessary to get us out of that complicated consciousness where we can practice what is natural, naturally.
Maharaj, faith, association, guidance from the senior devotee, most of the people have, that's why they come here. They take guidance also. But we come once a week here. And most of the time we are in the association with those people who are not devotees. And they have to work in the offices, they have to live with them.
Yeah.
And the family people, they are also not devotees. And now, so in that situation, you know, in spite of, we have faith, but we have also more faith in working, that we will work in the office, we'll earn money, if I please my boss, I'll get promotion, you know, here, it's all right, once a month or once a week, I will come here. So, there's so much, and to get even the association is not easy these days to the, so, it's so much a dilemma.
There's a practical formula that one can do as one's living outside. One has to adopt a practical program. That means one has to somehow or other take time for Krishna consciousness. Practical program is chant. Practical program is, if you're living with family, can also worship the Lord in the form of His deity. Keep a deity in your home or an altar and do every day do some puja. Some chanting, some puja. There's 5 points to the practical program. Would you like to hear the practical program? Okay. This is as practical as I can get. There may be a better formula, but this is the one I'm aware of. You're living outside with family and your responsibilities, you have to take time for Krishna consciousness. And there's 5 things you should consider. First one is, you should have some time for chanting. Depending on the strength of your vow, every day some japa. And regular. 2 is that it would be, it's nice to keep a deity, or at least an altar with some pictures of the Lord and the pure devotee, and regularly do some puja. Offer your food, do some simple puja, whatever time you have, 15, 20 minutes. The 3rd thing is, don't associate with materialistic people. Haha. So where does that fit in? Prabhupada says association means affection for and friendship with. Make friendships with devotees or make friendships with people who are practicing Krishna consciousness. You may have what we call acquaintances and colleagues but keep what is called a type of friendship that is official, that may be cordial, but not deep. If you go deep with people who are not devotees, then you wind up finding yourself in a very difficult and embarrassing situations, because conversations come to, and points of discussions come about breaking the principles of Krishna consciousness. So you may have what we call official friends, but deeper friends, real friendships, should be with like-minded persons who are devotees. And then the fourth thing is to give up the idea that I am the enjoyer. We are not the enjoyer. Krishna says, Bhoktaram yagya tapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suhidam sarvabhutanam shantamam yantam. Krishna says that he is the actual enjoyer. So we try to make Krishna enjoy through our devotional activities. So we become happy by pleasing Krishna. As you water the root, the branches, the twigs, the flowers, the fruits, everything connected with the root gets the benefit of the watering process. Krishna is the root of existence. When we take care of Krishna, we also find that we can fulfill all our desires. So don't try to enjoy separately. Find your happiness in devotional life. And the last thing is do some service. That everyone can find some time to do a little seva. Come to the temple, offer your time, do a little seva. If you can't do that, then you can offer some donation. Offering donation is also service. We have what is called manasa. We have our minds, we have our words, we have our resources, we have our intelligence. All these can be used to do some seva. So everyone can do a little seva according to their means. It's not that you have to do a lot. You can do what you can find time to do. These are five principles that you can apply. Chant the holy names, worship the deity, don't associate with non-devotees, give up the idea of that you're the enjoyer, and do a little seva. If you practically apply these five principles in your daily life outside, gradually you'll start making advancement, more advancement, steady advancement in Krishna consciousness. Then when you do come to the temple, it will be so wonderful. If you don't practice throughout the week and only come on Sunday, it's wonderful. But then again, what happens to you the rest of the week is that your consciousness goes down, down, down. So, some practical points. Okay, I have a question from someone. You gave the example of not feeding the tiger. Eventually the tiger becomes weak. But this seems to be regressive. Is there no positive solution for controlling lust? Well, there's two things. There's lust and there's love. Lust is simply love for Krishna, which is directed towards the material energy. The positive solution is to direct your attention to back towards Krishna. That's positive. Lust simply means in trying to satisfy one's desire separate from Krishna. And love means to try to satisfy Krishna, and by satisfying Krishna, one's desires become satisfied. And one awakens to their natural attraction for Krishna. So there's different ways. Chant the holy names, serve the Lord's devotees, read Srimad Bhagavatam, take Krishna Prasadam. Taking Krishna Prasadam is one way to decrease lust. Prabhupada explained that taking Prasadam one satisfies one's senses and one becomes happy. So prasadam is one of the most powerful ways to satisfy or to transform that lust into love. And live by regulative principles. No illicit activities. Follow the principles accordingly. If you follow the principles, no meat eating, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, these are four principles. If you're engaging in these things and you're practicing devotional service, you'll get very little benefit from that service because you're building a fire and at the same time you're throwing water on the fire. Our fire of devotion cannot burn as long as we are still engaging in sinful activities. So lust is there, but the way to conquer lust is keep busy for Krishna. If you're busy for Krishna, you don't have time for Maya. Ah, that's all. Keep busy for Krishna. That's all. Do what's necessary to live. But beyond that, use your time for devotional service. That's all. Prabhupada gave the example. I could tell you a story. Prabhupada was preaching here in India, and he gave a big pandal program. And at the end of the pandal program, many important ministers and government personnel were there. They came to meet Prabhupada at the end. And one man, he was a minister, very highly placed minister. He paid his full dandavats at the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada. And he was very humble, very submissive. And the devotees who were with Prabhupada, this was very new. They were very new in the movement. And all of them were Westerners. So they were shocked to see such highly placed officials being so humble in the presence of Prabhupada. So they asked Prabhupada, what is it about you that inspires a person to act like that? Prabhupada said, I have no lust. And then he turned and left. Got into his car and was driving back to his hotel. So the devotees were thinking, my God, we have so much lust. What are we going to do? So some of the devotees were riding with Prabhupada in his car, and it was quiet. Everyone was just chanting. And when Prabhupada reached the hotel, he got out of the car. He knew the devotees were thinking about what he said. He looked and said, it's not because I have no lust, it's because I have no time. I have no time. If you give Maya time, she got you. Don't give Maya any time, that's all. Stay busy for Krishna. That's all. Okay, should we stop here? Okay, thank you very much. And now we will have some kirtan, some short kirtan. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.